Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
We are back for the best segment you will watch. It is the Standing A Count, and I'm joined, as always, by Curran Bhatia. He is the SD Experts podcast host, yes. Multiple Emmy Award winner, HBO Sports, and today just happens to be his birthday. What better way to do it than debating some of the biggest topics? Curran, first of all, happy birthday, my man.
Thank you, Dan. No better way to spend the birthday than talking boxing, talking topics. I know you had an interesting weekend down in Miami, right?
I'm still recovering at the old age of 32 years old. I can't party like I once used to, but it was a great time. Great time out in Miami. It was up at the DAZN fight. I spent some time with the Barstool guys at Rough and Rowdy. We'll talk about that a little bit, but a big reason why I was out there was to talk with Deontay Wilder, and of course a big fight that is coming up on the schedule is Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury. There is no more hurdles, no more big fights in the way between those two. We saw some great shoulder programming that was produced by you, and it starred me as well as some great people in the boxing world over on PBC Countdown, Wilder Fury. But with the Super Bowl commercial as well, I'm starting to feel like this fight feels big. Do you feel the same way, Curran?
This is a big fight, a big event, and you're right. We're starting to get the feel part of that, like we said, tooting our own horn. I produced the Countdown show. You were on it. But the bigger part of that is that Countdown show is on Fox and ESPN, right? This is two major marketing platforms pushing the show. They had press conferences. They felt big. They had Kurt Menefee out there. People in mainstream sports are now getting involved. And here's the biggest reason it feels big. It actually is a big fight. You're not selling a farce here. You're selling the heavyweight championship. You got two guys. They're undefeated. They had an amazing first fight. They're charismatic. They love to talk. And we saw everyone watch the Super Bowl. You saw these spots. And that means sports fans are saying, wow, these guys fought. That looks like an exciting first fight. Oh, they're going to fight again? The awareness, right? The awareness is up. So it's a big fight, a big event. And yes, it is starting to feel big.
You know, it's funny because whenever something like this happens in boxing, whenever there's any attention, whether from the mainstream media or there's a commercial for a boxing event that's on something that isn't a boxing telecast, boxing people on Twitter go crazy. They go to Twitter and say, hey, did you see that commercial? Did you see that? And it's kind of like they make a big deal over something where in any other sport it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But this does feel big. This is a time where boxing fans can all gather together and they can be proud that they have a fight like this on the schedule. They can be proud that the heavyweights, first of all, are back in action and they're back in demand, because I think as boxing goes, or as heavyweights go, boxing goes. But to see a commercial like that on the Super Bowl, yep, with these two guys in it, it felt big, and I think that boxing fans should use this as a time to feel proud, because we finally have that big moment, and I think there's no better fight to promote and push on a platform where over 100 million people watch the Super Bowl. So you got to figure that they should get a sizable chunk of that will go order this fight, you would hope.
The boxing fans are going to watch this fight, right? It's always about getting the sports fans who maybe tune into big fights, and they did that with the Super Bowl commercial. This fight has everything except three heavyweight belts, and we'll talk about the person who has those other belts in our next topic, but it has the WBC belt, it has the lineal championship, and it has these two larger-than-life undefeated fighters. So it has everything except for three title belts, and we're going to talk about who has those three title belts. We spoke about Deontay Wilder, WBC champ. We spoke about lineal champ. Who has the other three belts? Anthony Joshua. And who is he fighting most likely? Kubrat Pulev. Now, here's my question for you, Dan. Are you satisfied with this fight?
I mean, yes and no. I'm satisfied because I think out of the list of other suitors that could fight Anthony Joshua and the ones that make the most sense, Pulev is on that short list. And it's funny because when I spoke with Joshua in New York City before his fight with Andy Ruiz, he said, if I win this fight, I'm going to fight a guy at the end of the bar. He said it tongue-in-cheek, and it was a clear shot at Tyson Fury and some of the heavyweights out there that are fighting lesser opponents than Joshua has. Is Kubrat Pulev a guy at the end of the bar? No, but he's a mandatory. When you have three of the four belts, you're going to have a lot of mandatories. You're going to have a lot of guys coming for those belts. So therefore, instead of not giving up a title, he has to fight these mandatories. And Pulev is a guy that was in there with Vladimir Klitschko. He's a guy that's been around. He has somewhat of a fan-friendly style, or he's trying to make it more of a fan-friendly style. So, I mean, do I want to see Anthony Joshua in there with Fury and Wilder? Of course. But this is the case when you are a fighter with holding three belts, you have mandatories. I think that Joshua deserves a fight like this, get it back in the UK. He is a fighter that is acclimating to a new style, and I think that Pulev will be a perfect guy for him to get some rounds.
Is Pulev the guy at the end of the bar? Kind of. He's at the one loss, only loss to Vladimir Klitschko.
You were going to say he's at the end of the bar kissing reporters, but I won't go there.
No, let's not go there. So he had the one loss to Vladimir Klitschko. Okay, that's fine. That's fair enough. The one issue comes into play is Joshua, 30 years old, Pulev, 38 years old. So you're not saying, okay, he's obviously most likely past his prime. In terms of his ranking, he's ranked 14, 11, number one by the IBF, which is why he's getting the shot. He's not ranked by the other sanctioning body. So that's a little iffy, but here's the thing. You spoke to Anthony Joshua in New York. He said, I want a tune-up fight. I am usually very much against tune-up fights, but someone like Errol Spence, right? We talked about he was in the car accident. We think he should have a tune-up fight. Someone like Anthony Joshua, you lost your title. It was embarrassing. You got knocked out. You worked really hard to avenge that. I'm okay with you taking a tune-up fight while you wait for Wilder and Fury to resolve their rematch. Because what is the other option? Him just not fighting or fighting someone else? I mean, there's not that many other good fighters outside of Wilder and Fury, right?
I mean, he has to take the fight. He wants to keep the belts and he wants to make a unification or undisputed fight with whoever wins Wilder versus Fury. He has to fight those mandatory guys, and I'm okay with Pulev. And if it also sets up a fight in the summer or the fall with Usyk, I'm all for it. I think people will be totally fine with Anthony Joshua fighting Pulev and Usyk. But Joshua is in a very interesting point in his career. He is the unified champion in heavyweight division. But is he considered number one or number two in the division? No, he's probably three behind Wilder and Fury. So it's interesting with him. He's a guy coming off of a new style. Put Pulev in there, have him get some rounds, and then we see Joshua move on. And that's something that Joshua deserves at this point in his career. Sticking with the heavyweight theme, Andy Ruiz was once the king of the heavyweight division. Now he is at the bottom. That's how boxing works. He's without a trainer, and a lot of names are being thrown in there. Teddy Atlas, his name has been floated. I want that from a content standpoint. I don't know if it's a perfect fit from a boxing standpoint. Colonel, I'll ask you, who do you think is the best fit trainer-wise for Andy Ruiz Jr.?
Yeah, we know that Ruiz has talked to Teddy Atlas. Here's what we know about Teddy Atlas's training style. It's military style. Tim Bradley said when he was being trained by Teddy Atlas, he couldn't make a phone call. He couldn't break eye contact. So now is a guy like Ruiz, who's now maybe accustomed to a little bit more of a lax lifestyle. We saw that he came into the last fight ballooned up at 283 pounds. The discipline wasn't there. Is he going to be able to gel with that military style? I actually think someone else would be a perfect trainer, and that's Freddie Roach, and I'll tell you why. So Ruiz, I believe, came up in that wild card system. He's probably familiar with Freddie Roach. But the other part of it is that Ruiz needs offensive help, right? That's what was lacking in his rematch with Joshua. He doesn't have a shaky chin. Joshua knocked him down. Ruiz popped right back up. Freddie Roach is an offensive guru, as we know, and I think he'll bring the best out of Ruiz. So that would be my pick if I was to advise Andy Ruiz on who to train with.
Not a bad pick, and I think it goes in line with what I'm about to pick for trainer-wise. I think that Roach isn't a rah-rah guy. He's not going to get in your face. He's kind of going to lead with his track record. There's no trainer right now that has a better track record at the moment than Eddie Reynoso, and I think it would be the perfect fit for Andy Ruiz. You got to look at it. He trains Canelo Alvarez. Andy Ruiz and Canelo Alvarez are friendly. He's a Mexican fighter as well. And it looks like the Reynosos are willing to add on talent as they go ahead. Look at Oscar Valdez. Look at Ryan Garcia. They're starting to build out a great little stable out there in San Diego. I think that's where Canelo trains. I don't think that he needs something as extreme as Teddy Atlas, but from a content standpoint, would that be great.
Let's
just
get
think
some
about it.
In there, right?
Just think about the Dank City episodes when Andy Ruiz is biting into the third cheeseburger of the day and then boom! Teddy Atlas kicks down the door and makes Ruiz eat his shoe. That would be just unbelievable from a standpoint. I don't think it's going to happen. But someone like Eddie Reynoso, who has a track record, he's the trainer of the year. Yeah. You know, what Andy Ruiz needs motivation. I think it's pretty obvious. What better motivation would he have than training side by side with Canelo Alvarez? I think that right there for Ruiz will be the best path towards getting back to the top.
That's hilarious. I'm imagining the scene in Rounders, if you ever remember, he opened the Oreo. You know, it's like Ruiz after training, kind of grabbing, going for the cookie jar, and Teddy Atlas smacking his hand. That'd be great. A couple other names. Ben Davison, he was training Tyson Fury. He's not anymore, right? Maybe there's something there. Maybe.
I saw on Twitter, someone brought that up, and Ben Davis said, he said, I could never train someone to fight Fury.
That's my point. That was my point, because maybe if that fight does happen, that's a secret weapon. It sounds like, okay, he's saying that's not going to happen. Sugar Hill Stewart, who is now training Tyson Fury, that's someone who's from that Kronk gym mentality. You know, he's the nephew of Emmanuel Stewart, who was always great at turning fighters around and kind of bringing them back. So that's another person that I could see him working with. So I think there's a bunch of trainers at his disposal. I just think it's good that he's thinking about making changes, right? Because we know he was undisciplined.
One last name to throw out there, Joe Goosen. Joe Goosen's a guy that is a disciplinarian, but also is known as a fighter's trainer. I think he'd be a good choice as well.
Yep. We are talking about the welterweight division and now the uncertainty in the welterweight division. I say that because Errol Spence, we know, was in a car accident. He's recovering. He says he's going to be back in spring or summer. Danny Garcia fought recently. He didn't look great. He claimed he had to lose 25 pounds in 8 weeks. Okay. Ugas had a pretty big win, but not a lot of people want to fight him. So, Dan, what do you make of the overall landscape of the welterweights right now?
I think the welterweight division, and for a while, has been known as the most reliable division in boxing, with the most, that's always been the glamour division. But I think right now, for the first time in a long time, it has the most parity of any division in boxing. And that's because of the uncertainty at the top with Errol Spence. If Errol Spence comes back and he's fine, we go back to normal and he is the cash cow, he's the best fighter in the division. Take a look at Terrence Crawford. He has never looked more vulnerable than he did in his last fight against Mean Machine. I don't care what he says, he got hit with a ton of flush shots, the most punches that were ever landed on Terrence Crawford in his entire career. You take a look at Sean Porter. He is a very game fighter, but he has a lot of miles on the odometer there. Then you look at Danny Garcia, who just fought. Wasn't the most inspiring effort. Ugas, like you just said, is a very good fighter, but is a guy that's going to be avoided. With this all being said, is Manny Pacquiao at age 41 the most sure thing in the welterweight division, a division that we thought was going to have all these young lions come up? It's now Manny that is looking the best right now, and it just has you thinking, like, boxing is, at this point, you can't predict it.
It's yet another decade, I guess, with Manny in the conversation.
He may fight until he's 51.
We'll be talking about this next decade, too. It's an interesting time in the welterweight division. So, for a long time, it was Spence and Crawford, 1 and 1A, however you wanted to have it. Now, it's Crawford and everyone else. I know he was looked vulnerable against Mean Machine. It probably should have been a knockdown there early in that fight. But it's still Terrence Crawford and everyone else. But I want to throw some things out there to you that make it a very interesting division. Keith Thurman is going to be coming back from his loss to Manny Pacquiao. That was a very close fight. I was impressed by Keith Thurman's performance. He's right back in the mix. Sean Porter, he lost to Spence. That was a great performance by him. I was impressed by his performance even in the loss. He's going to be in the mix. Here's the lob here. Floyd Mayweather posted.
Oh, choose.
He's a welterweight, remember? And he said he's coming back in 2020. Who knows if he wants to fight Khabib? And they said they would fight 11 rounds in boxing, one in MMA. He wants to fight Conor. Who knows? So we may be talking about Manny and Floyd in this decade. There's a bunch of other people. I'm going to name one other guy, Virgil Ortiz Jr. He's 15-0 with 15 knockouts. So I think, to your point, it's not the way it used to be, but it's all over the place. And that actually could be a good thing.
No, this is a good thing. I'm glad you brought up Virgil Ortiz. That brings me to my next point is the welterweight division. We think of just the PBC top five guys. This is a time where guys at 140 are going to move up to 147. The Regis Prograis, the Josh Taylors. Mikey Garcia is a name that's in the division as well. I know he has a couple fights at 147 now. But guys like Virgil Ortiz and some of the other guys at 140, the Ryan Garcia, the Teofimo Lopez, I know he's at 135, but eventually he's going to settle at 147. This division that we thought was top heavy with veterans is going to get potentially turned upside down in the next couple of years, and I think that's a very good thing.
It's red hot in a different way, but still a good thing.
Curran, it is time for the Canelo Alvarez portion of the show. It's not a show unless we talk about Canelo. Once again, we don't know who he's going to be fighting. We know that Ryoto Murata is out of the sweepstakes, according to sources, Mike Coppinger. But there are two names that are now emerging. It's Callum Smith and it's BJ Saunders. Out of those two, who would you like to see Canelo fight?
Well, it's an interesting question. As a fan, you'd prefer the more competitive fight. That's Callum Smith. Now, that's challenging for many reasons. Smith, undefeated. He wants to avenge his brother's loss. The bigger part of it is he's 6'3". Canelo's 5'8". Now, we know Canelo had success against Rocky Fielding, who was 6'1". Canelo going to the body. This is a whole different beast, right? But an easier fight, maybe, for Canelo is BJ Saunders. He's 6'1". He's looked more vulnerable recently, in his most recent two fights. So as a fan, if I have to go through those two, I would say Smith. If I'm Canelo, I'll probably take Saunders. We know that it opens up into so many other opponents. If we're just looking at from fandom, we'd like to see Triple G. We'd like to see Charlo, Andrade, whoever. So I would say with those two, I would rather see the Smith fight.
Right. For me, my choice would be, just enter it yourself at the bottom. Write it in. It would be Triple G or it'd be Charlo, but we're not getting that. It seems like we're only going to get Callum Smith or BJ Saunders. And I know I'm going to take a little flack for this. I'm a BJ Saunders fan. I like defense, and there is no better defensive fighter at that weight class and maybe in all of boxing than BJ Saunders. And I think it would be an interesting matchup from that standpoint. Don't expect a really exciting fight between Canelo and BJ Saunders because both guys throw under the weight class average at 168. But Canelo does throw more punches than BJ Saunders per round. Canelo is more accurate than BJ Saunders, so it'd be from a stylistic standpoint, it'll be interesting to see how if Canelo can land on Saunders, who has one of the best defensive fighters in the game. But Saunders is a name; I think a lot of boxing fans know who he is, and he's also someone that fights up to his competition. We've seen him fight down to competition. Yes. His last fight, he didn't look that great against a relative no name. He fights Canelo. I think he takes his training camp very serious. He's working with Ben Davison, who is an excellent trainer. You know he's going to have him ready to go, and Ben Davison happens to love the CompuBox punch stats. He DMs me on the regular asking for those stats, so I think that right there, that's a fight that I would like to see.
Yeah, we'd like to see that. You brought up Eddie Reynoso. So Eddie Reynoso was complimenting Sergey Kovalev before that fight came together. Now, if you'll notice Eddie Reynoso's language, he's complimenting BJ Saunders. So that means that most likely that's going to be the fight. You can also sell that fight, right? Saunders undefeated. He's a champion. It's an interesting style. It's a bigger guy, right? So there's a lot to sell out there. I wonder if Canelo's looking back at Murata and saying, hey, that was my chance to fight in Japan against a 34-year-old guy with a couple losses.
That opportunity
is gone for now, but I wonder if he's looking at that and saying, oh, I wish I could have actually had that opportunity.
Well,
in Japan.
Canelo can do whatever he wants. I mean, he's got the zone by the neck. He's got everyone by the neck, and I think that what he did right here for this fight was a classic Mayweather move. Is he's negotiating. He brought up Murata just to lower the price for Saunders. I ultimately think it's BJ Saunders in May.
He probably learned a lot from Mayweather. We know in boxing there's no overarching body to set all the rules. It's a fragmented sport, and there's been a lot of questionable behavior from some of these boxers recently. So let me ask you this, Dan. Is there being enough done to penalize fighters?
Short answer is no, and I'll take you through some of the strange things that have been happening and disturbing things, to be honest. Outside the ring, we are obviously celebrating a great time in boxing. We have the biggest fight coming up between Wilder and Fury. It's getting pushed on the grand stage, but as we know with boxing, you take one step forward, expect two steps back right after it. Ivan Redcatch, we'll start with the least infraction of them all. Ivan Redcatch bit Danny Garcia on his shoulder. Did he get a point taken away in that fight? No. Did he get his purse taken away? Yes. And he's suspended for a year? Yes as well. That just shows you that maybe was a little too much being penalized. Take a look at what we saw. Jarrell Miller. Obviously, he failed those three drug tests. Stone cold cheater. One of the worst cases of doping we've seen in boxing in a very long time. What is his... how is he penalized? He gets a deal with Top Rank. He misses 6 months because of a technicality in New York State. He'll be back in the ring in no time with a fresh new contract from Top Rank and ESPN. And finally, the most disturbing of them all was Gervonta Davis. This video that emerged from Super Bowl weekend down in Miami, grabbing the mother of his child by the neck or maybe by the jacket, dragging her out of there while on camera, which leads me to my thinking here is, who is dishing out these penalties? In any other sport, Gervonta Davis is sitting out in half of the season. Go look at baseball and most recently with Domingo Germán, pitcher for the New York Yankees. There is no footage of what happened to him. It is still not known what he did, and yet he will miss 80 games this year, one of the harshest penalties in the history of the sport. There needs to be more done in boxing, but who will do this? This has always been the problem with the sport.
Someone needs to step up and say, I am penalizing this person, and then we need to hopefully get other people to join forces, make it less fragmented on these type of issues. So if you look at the disturbing video of Tank Davis, it's not exactly to the level of Ray Rice, but it's very graphic, and it's not a good look for anyone, especially an athlete. And it would fall under, in any other sport, it'd be, you know, conduct detrimental to the league or the team, and there'd be some kind of suspension or penalty, as there should be. You look with Big Baby Miller, that's probably that happens in other sports sometimes, where a player gets picked up by another team, right, and wants to take a chance on him. The red catch thing is crazy, because you're right, he bit Danny Garcia. No points are taken off during the fight, and then he loses his entire $300,000 purse. That's an expensive bite. He will appeal, and hopefully that will go down, because that's just too severe, right? So now we're dealing with things that are not severe enough, or nothing happening, or things that are too severe. And that's one of the big problems with boxing. We know it's fragmented, and this just shows that. Now, that's not the sole reason that people aren't as interested in boxing as they used to be, but it's a contributing factor. And if we can get promoters and networks to come together and say, things like this, we're going to work together and make an overarching body, things like VADA testing, things like that, that would be great for our overall sport and the growth of our sport.
Lastly, before we go, the Toronto Davis, he will get penalized. He probably got a stern talking to from the powers that be at PBC, but what it comes down to, it will come out of his pocket on the back end. Less people will want to watch his fights, less people will order his fights, and we know that he wants to be a pay-per-view star, so maybe he'll feel it that way if he doesn't get a formal suspension.
He may, but people said with Mayweather's aura, sometimes it added to that aura, and people maybe tuned in because of that.
Curran, I was down in Miami, as we've illustrated on this show. So was Logan Paul, and so was Antonio Brown, and so was every single media member and celebrity known to man. They got on the stage, and they stared each other down. A lot of rumors about this fight. Is the zone going too far if they go ahead and put Logan Paul in a ring with Antonio Brown? I can't believe I'm saying this right now.
Well, first of all, it's evident you're in Miami. I can feel your hangover from here.
I'm tired.
I'm sure you had a good time.
Tired.
I actually think Logan Paul versus Antonio Brown is a good thing. I've been supportive of these YouTube fights, and the reason is I've said that these YouTubers are bringing their audience, and there's a lot of work to be done to have subscribers. So Jake Paul was just on the zone. He has 19.7 million YouTube subscribers. It takes work to put out that content. So I believe, I've always said, you've earned the right now to be on this platform. And I like that The Zone is experimenting. They're seeing what works. If these guys are main events, if they're not, if they're an undercard, how does it work? Also, Logan Paul versus Antonio Brown would be massive in terms of sports fans and appeal. And every time it's mentioned, where is that going to be? Oh, The Zone. Okay, cool. It makes people aware of The Zone. So I think it's a good idea, and I think they should move forward with that.
Well, I think it's a good idea, but let me say it with an asterisk next to it. The asterisk goes next to Antonio Brown's name on this card. If he is still showing or displaying this erratic behavior, if he's still getting in trouble with the law, I think The Zone comes to their senses, Eddie Hearn, and they don't do this fight. That is what's most important. That is the mental health and the safety of Antonio Brown. If he stays out of the news and he starts getting into training, and I know he wants to make money, I think he wants to up the offer to $8 million, and he's willing to donate all of that money that he makes for this fight to charity, then it's fun. And then we can talk about this in a better light rather than a cash grab, which these fights usually are. But I just don't know where exactly I stand on these fights, but I do know that I am not totally against them. I don't understand the people out there, and you'll go on Twitter and you'll see the integrity of the sport being thrown out there. Guys, there is no integrity in this sport. I've been in this sport for a very long time. It is a sport that originated in carnivals, so don't be upset when a circus comes into town and they're going to fight on the zone. Another thing is I don't understand those who go out of their way to make announcements that they are not watching something or that they don't support something. Okay, great. It's not about you. They can put on a fight and you can simply not watch the fight. When you go on Netflix and you see a show on there that you don't like, do you write to Netflix and complain, I don't like this show? No, you simply go over it and you do not watch it. I think this fight will be huge, and I think it's something that we're all talking about. It's polarizing, and it's going to happen, I think, in Vegas around the NFL draft.
Logan Paul versus KSI was one of the most highest streamed programs on The Zone. If you look at the YouTube highlights, it's huge in the tens of millions. People want to see this stuff. There's an interest level for this stuff. Even people like BJ Saunders, who was on the undercard of Paul KSI, his followers went up, the awareness went up, right? These are all good things. And to your point, if you don't like it, you don't have to watch it.
Right. A lot of people are saying, yeah, you don't have to watch it, but it's ruining the sport, and it's look at this, that, and the other. I mean, we live in a world where there's so much content out there. If you don't want to watch, don't watch the fight.
We talked about YouTubers fighting. Dan, I know you were down in Miami at Rough and Rowdy. So that's another form of non-traditional boxing, so to speak. So let me ask you this. How should boxing feel when there are these events that are not necessarily the traditional form of boxing?
Yeah, this was an interesting week. Going from the YouTube event for DAZN on Thursday night right to Rough and Rowdy Barstool's event on Friday. I was invited over to there. I was ringside to kind of check it out, what they're all about. I am a somewhat of a fan of Barstool, and I like how they've been doing these boxing things. But long story short, I think boxing fans should feel flattered that boxing, that DAZN is, and YouTubers are going to boxing, and that a company like Barstool, which is wildly popular, is putting on these boxing events. Are they big, huge, like, competitive fights? No, and I think they embrace that. Whereas on the DAZN side, I think that the YouTubers are taking it serious, and that's good because they're sanctioned fights. Go over to the Barstool stuff. No, that is not sanctions. There were vertically challenged individuals fighting. There were fat guys versus little guys. There is all sorts of walks of life in there. But one thing was for certain, it was packed to the gills. You had NFL quarterbacks there. You had celebrities. You had models. And it was felt like a big event. And boxing has always been like that. I mean, that's the reason why there's so many movies about boxing. It could be a time where someone goes to a fight for the very first time. They know what to expect. It's a big event. And I think that these sporting events, these non-traditional boxing entities tapping into that, it's good. It's fun.
For a long time in history, people used to go into big theaters and watch people in combat, right? And that's always going to be that way. And you always see celebrity boxing here and there. You see, like, Screech from Saved by the Bell is involved
Danny
in some
Bonaduce,
fight.
Yeah.
The Bagel Boss guy is involved in some. You know, this is always going to be around. And if you look at, there's always other forms of it. How to make it more interesting. There was BKB, where they were kind of in, like, a little bit of an arena where they slanted towards each other. There's Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship, right? There's a lot of different types of combat out there, and I think you're right. It's good that people are using boxing as their avenue to settle scores and to entertain us, right? You come to a fight, it doesn't matter exactly the rules, if it's MMA, boxing, whatever. You grab a drink, you're watching two people in combat, there's not any crazy rules, you can just kind of enjoy that, right?
Yeah.
And so I think boxing fans should be happy that they have this.
It was interesting being at Rough and Rowdy. They actually let me judge a few fights. I got that out of the way. I've never done something like that. Obviously, I've counted a lot of punches, never actually judged a fight. It was awesome to be able to do that. And you're right, just looking around the crowd, walking through that venue down in Miami for this Rough and Rowdy Barstool, you're seeing models, you're seeing NFL quarterbacks, but they all were watching boxing, and it's okay. As long as boxing stays in the general public, and it's that's a good thing, and I think there'll be a lot more of this going forward.
We know that there was also a lot of celebrities in the crowd, right? Rob Lowe, Sam Darnold, Mark Sanchez, Dan Canobio as one of the judges. So what was that atmosphere like?
It was nuts. It was like a rave mixed in with boxing, mixed in with like a concert. You know, Rob Lowe is asking me what's going on. It quickly turned to doom when the rain started to come down, and it was impossible to get out of there. But, you know, talking to Portnoy and Big Cat and those guys, they love the CompuBox, and they love the fact that there was some like legitimacy ringside. But I think one last thing, I think these YouTube fights and these Rough and Rowdy stuff, I think it just shows you how hard boxing is and how elite top boxers are. And I think that is one positive that people probably should talk about a little more.
And did Shooter McGavin get out of there?
Okay. There was a video circulating of Shooter McGavin. I think he's left at the 19th hole, the old sprinkler trick. It was a mess getting out of there, but I survived and I'm here. That is a wrap for another edition of Inside Boxing Live. Got to thank my guest, Kurram Bhatia, the birthday boy, for joining us for a great segment of Standing 8 Count. Some fights upcoming this week over on Showtime. Gary Russell makes his yearly pilgrimage into the ring when he takes on King Tug. No, I'm not talking about Tyson Fury. Kell Brook also in action this weekend. And as we get one step closer to Wilder versus Fury, we're back next week with more Inside Boxing Live.